Welcome to Parents Perspective. Oh, no. Glenda put down the phone, her hands trembling.
What was that?
Her husband Tom turned over in bed. Who would call in the middle of the night?
It's the hospital. Derek was just admitted to the emergency room.
She began to sob, shedding her nightclothes and pulling on her sweats.
What?
Tom nearly shouted, now fully awake and lunging for his pants and shirt. How in blazes did that happen?
I don't know, Glenda sniffled, grabbing her purse. He said he was just going out with his friends.
He's got a lot to answer for, Tom shot back, snatching his wallet and keys. But first, he paused, he's got to recover. Let's get in the car.
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about teens and alcohol abuse? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today, we'll be talking with two adults who can give us some different perspectives on some of the issues involved. Beth Kane Davidson is director of the Suburban Hospital Addiction Treatment Center in Bethesda, Maryland. She is the mother of young twin sons. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Beth.
Thank you very much for having me.
Mimi Fleury is the former president of Georgetown Preparatory School Board and chairman of the Committee of Parents, who put together a pamphlet entitled A Parent's Guide for the Prevention of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Other Drug Use. The grassroots organization that shares this booklet is called the Community of Concern. Mimi has three sons. We're glad you could join us today.
Thank you for having me.
In addition to our two guest experts today, we have interviewed some teens and asked them about their experiences with and opinions about alcohol. What's the most important thing for parents to know about teens and alcohol?
This is one of my favorite things to talk about because parents can make such a difference in the lives of teens when it comes to alcohol and other drug use. We're finding more and more that parents are the number one influence on their kids when it comes to saying yes to picking up a drink or another drug.
Now, how do parents wield this influence? We hear and see parents saying no till they're blue in the face and the kids go out to a party and they have something to drink.
Well, it's really called hands-on parenting and staying on top of your kids. I know that kids will roll their eyes and feel like, here we go again. But what the research is showing, that repeating the messages, alcohol and other drugs, you're not to be using them. You need to call us if you're at a party where there is alcohol or other drugs. You know, you really need to keep making those messages very, very clear to the kids. And what will happen in the future is the kids will come back and thank you. Parents need to be parents, not pals.
Kids we talked with all said that partying is where the alcohol is, and that's where the peer pressure is as well.
Absolutely. So that is why parents need to give the kids the excuse to leave that party or to not even go at all.
As a parent, I agree totally with what has been said, and I would like to add to that that one of the most important things for parents to know about teens and alcohol is how much more likely it is for them to become addicted to alcohol than adults. And I base this information on an epidemiologic study that was done at the National Institute of Health, which says that 40% of those individuals who were studied in the survey, and there were about 25 to 40,000 people that were surveyed, and 40% of those surveyed who began to drink alcohol at the age of 15 became, at some point in their lives, alcoholic. Only 8 to 10% of those who began to drink when they were 21 became alcoholic at some point in their lives. But the message is so clear, the longer you can delay the introduction of alcohol into an individual's life, the less likely they will be to have to carry the burden of an addiction, which is not just an individual burden, it's a family burden. And so I think that for parents to be the guardrails is such an important part of our job. And I heard someone speaking recently who said, kids don't like limits. And we were all like, you know, duh. And the individual continued to say to kids, limits are oxygen. So the idea is that our kids can't survive without our limits.
We've talked about what's the most important things for parents. What would be the most important thing for teens to know, do you think?
I think we would start with the possibility of becoming addicted, but they always feel like, not me, I'm not the one.
Well, I think that as the science becomes more and more clear regarding the dangers that alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs cause to the development of teens' brains, the negative effects are no longer something far out in the future. They are much more immediate. For example, the areas of the brains that are developing are areas that relate specifically to learning, memory, and judgment making. And we, as parents, have our children in these schools. We're driving them around to all of their extracurricular after-school events. But if we're allowing them to drink or use other drugs, looking the other way, the fact that they are negatively impacting their ability, for example, to remember and to be able to perform well in our schools, or their ability to be able to be coordinated, their motor skills are affected. And I think that, you know, when kids realize this, along with parents, that together we can really make a difference.
Yeah, and I think just from working in addiction treatment with kids that have crossed the line into addiction, I think it's important for teens to know that there is help and they can get help. That they should identify someone. It may not be their mother or their father, but maybe it would be someone at the school or somebody else's mother and father that they could go to, that they could say, you know, either they're having a problem or they've got a friend that's had a problem. I know that when we go out and speak, especially if we're speaking to students, it's interesting that after the assembly's over and the students are lining up and moving out of the room, and the teachers are moving out, there's always a few that lag behind. And their question is generally, what do we do if we're worried about one of our friends? So I think we're at a time in our life that we need to help kids figure out how to get to the people that can help them.
Sometimes it's a coach or the sponsor of an activity. Seems to me any adult in a child's life could be a person they could start with.
Exactly. Exactly.
I remember a wise mother once said to me that she asked her children at different points, if you had some trouble and you couldn't come to us, to whom would you go? And I thought that's a wonderful thing to put in a kid's head, so that right there on the front of the radar screen is that idea.
Exactly. And the thing is, we're at a time in our society where we're looking at emergency plans. Well, alcohol and drug use for our teens is an emergency, and we need to help them, like you said, you know, who would you go to? And not just to do that once, coming back to the great need to repeat information about alcohol and other drugs. Keep the communication open. Don't make it a subject that's hard to talk about. And so who would you go to? What would you do? Is a great thing for the kids to know.
What do you think is the biggest myth that teens believe when it comes to using alcohol?
Well, I think the biggest myth that teens believe is that everyone is drinking. I think that there are a lot of kids who are making good decisions not to use. And I think that to help kids, we need to bring to the kids as role models those kids in their schools, in our schools, who have made good decisions, and have them talk to the kids about, gee, how did I decide not, you know, when I started high school, I decided, you know, that I wasn't going to drink or use other drugs during high school. Why did I make that decision? How did I do it? And so it will help to give kids a little toolkit that they could use to walk that same walk. And I think that rather than bringing to them kids who've had problems, and that's kind of been a trend recently where you bring in kids that have addictions and with the hope of inspiring them not to go in that direction, if we kind of turn it around and bring the positive role models to the kids, I think that would help dispel this myth that everyone is drinking.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on teens and alcohol.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective.
We are talking with Beth Kane Davidson and Mimi Fleury about teens and alcohol. It's interesting, one of the teens that we interviewed talked about something called straight edge, which evidently is a new thing, and the kids are pledging not to have sex before marriage and not to drink and not to have drugs and not to do smoking and so forth. And she said, that's just ridiculous. She said, people pledge it all the time. Nobody does it. She said, it's just for show. And so she had a very bad opinion of what really happened. She said they stand up there and they're supposed to be models, but they're really not, because she knows people who've done that. And so it's interesting. I guess it's a two-edged sword to try to give them models, and yet kids are kids.
Mm-hmm.
One of the kids said two things that I thought were especially interesting. She said, nobody likes the taste of beer. They think they're supposed to drink it. They think they're supposed to like it. They just keep drinking it, but nobody likes it. She talked about the process of teens appearing before a court of their peers, and the sentencing is community service. And she had a minimum sentence because she had a party at her house where there was drinking, and she stopped going to parties. And she said, most kids don't repeat the offense if they go through this teen court process. And she said she's done so many different things now that she's stopped partying. She's gotten involved in other kinds of activities and has achieved a lot of things she might not have done.
It's another example of role modeling. The kids on the teen court role modeling to the individual who made a bad decision. And I'd like to also just revisit what you said about straight edge. I don't know anything about straight edge, but what we're talking about is bringing in kids as role models who are second semester seniors, who are literally a few months away from graduating and have already walked the walk through our high schools without drinking, smoking, or using other drugs. And those individuals, not someone who is a sophomore or a junior and still has, you know, half of their high school career to go through.
What's the reaction of kids to kids like that? I mean, I would think some kids are totally turned off.
It's actually, in our experience, been the exact opposite, which is we had wondered that as well.
Yeah.
But the first time we did it, we had a young man who talked about, you know, he had made the decision early on not to drink during high school. And he talked about what you spoke of, so many other things he was able to do with his time and his energy. And he said something that really stuck with me, and that's that when he went to a party and he said no, when somebody offered him alcohol, there were five or six other kids that said no right behind him. And he felt really great about that because he was seeing the influence that he was already having on others.
He was empowering his peers.
Exactly.
Right. And he also left. When he would leave a party, five or six others would get up to follow him out. That was powerful, mm-hmm. too.
But back to your question of the reaction. The reaction in the audience was, from parents and kids, a standing ovation. Now, Mimi and I think we're pretty good speakers.
But not as good as he.
We did not get a standing ovation. I mean, it was heartwarming. And so we have really started to look at, you know, let's celebrate the kids that don't use. Because I agree completely with Mimi in terms of the myth that teens have is everybody's using. And the fact of the matter is, no, not everybody is using. And if they can come together and parents can come together and sponsor activities that are alcohol-free, you will find more and more kids joining and recognizing each other and that, oh, you don't use either? Me? No, I don't. And you will get more applause.
What, in your experience, generally blindsides parents about this whole process?
As a parent, having walked through two adolescents and in the middle of walking through our third and last adolescence with our sons, I think that two things blindsided me. The first one was the age of first use, that, you know, younger and younger and younger. This is not a problem of, I mean, the problem doesn't start as a junior or a senior in high school. It can start when the kids are much younger than that. And Beth can talk about national ages of first use. The other thing I think that really blindsided me was the fact that my friends, people that I knew really well, were not necessarily on the same page with me regarding the underage use of alcohol. And I think that was really, really hard.
I think one of the things that I find that really blindsides parents is other parents. Mm-hmm. Is that you think that all the parents are on the same page, and then you find out that actually they're not, that some parents may think it's okay to serve alcohol in their house, so just take their keys. And so it's really getting parents to get back into the networking mode that they may have been in when their kids were really little. When our kids are little, you know, mine are still little, so I'm still into exactly what they're doing, always driving them there, always, you know, going in and talking to the parents, always picking them up because they're only nine. As kids get older, we lose track, and we also become much more trusting of our own peers as parents. And what I think parents become shocked at is how different parents are thinking. So we really need to close back in and make sure that we're all on the same page. I think the other thing that Mimi mentioned was age of first use. And for boys, it's 12. For girls, it's 13. You mentioned the fact that some of the kids talked about not liking the taste of beer. Well, we're seeing a drop in the age related to what's called Alco-Pops, which is very sweet-flavored malt beverages. The American Medical Association just came out with a survey that finds that the advertising of these Alco-Pops is targeting young girls. We're starting to see a rise in young girls drinking. So that's another thing. Parents really need to be aware of what the kids are up against. I'm always trying to help parents understand that the world is different in many, many ways. And one of the most important ways it's different for our kids in their health is alcohol.
The industry is now offering things that taste good to the kids.
Absolutely.
That's unbelievable.
And the flavors are strawberry, you know, watermelon, you know,
and
all
popsicles or they're
soda.
They're
Alco-Pops. Like
they're
soda.
Okay. But there are also these things called zippers, which are Jello shots, and they're in Melon Head and Rum Rush. So if I could say one thing that parents could do is get out there and educate themselves.
Where do you buy things like that?
Go to your local beer and wine store or ABC store and walk the cases. But walk the cases in terms of looking at what's out there, looking at the brands, looking at the advertising. And that will really wake a parent up. In fact, we just did a program recently, and I take Alco-Pops and I show them to the parents. And one of the fathers sitting in the audience raised his hand, and he said, you know what? For me, you have just broken the code. I can see the bridge now. I can see what's happening, and what can I do?
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on teens and alcohol.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Beth Kane Davidson and Mimi Fleury about teens and alcohol.
If we can just talk to our kids about delaying drinking, that, you know, it's not going to be like there's going to be a big sale on beer and all the beer is going to be gone by the time you're 21. It will be there. But if you could delay, the chances of your having a normal relationship with alcohol throughout your life are much better. And I think that colleges are also responding to this. There's substance-free housing available for kids. They're having, you know, very good substance abuse policies that they're enforcing, parental notification policies. So this doesn't just stop when the kids are seniors in high school. It continues on through their college years because they're most often not 21 until sometime later in their college career.
It's another whole show, and that's a very important point.
Mimi, can you tell us a little bit about your organization, the Community of Concern, and what inspired you to found it?
Well, sure. I'm a parent. I'm not an expert. And I always like to say that in the beginning. I'm a former president of the parent board of the Georgetown Preparatory School. And when I was in that position, the head of our school asked me to put together a booklet by and for parents about substance abuse prevention. And so I asked 10 families to work, and we did this and put together the book. But the real question is, what was the wake-up call? Basically, I guess it started when we were planning the graduation party for one of our sons, and we were planning with 5 families that we knew really well, and we talked about where we were going to have it, what we were going to serve to eat, and one of the parents said, well, what are we going to serve to drink? Do you all think kegs are enough? We basically said, you know, are you guys nuts? First of all, it's illegal, and secondly, we've gotten our kids through high school, and the night of the graduation, you want to serve alcohol. And it was the response of the parent that was a wake-up call for us. And it was basically, if we don't serve alcohol, no one will come. And so on the way home, we talked about, you know, who's driving this bus? You know, our kids are pushing us to break the law so that their friends will come to this party that we're going to have for them. And that made us begin to think about, gee, you know, I think as parents, we need to be on the same page in this regard. It would help if we had some kind of a guide. And so we put together the booklet, and it has spread in a grassroots fashion across the country. And there are now over 1.2 million copies in 29 different states. And I think that one thing that's really important to understand is that the community of concern, which is the name of the initiative to share the little booklet, it's not about not drinking, because of course we know that alcohol is a legal drug for adults. It is really the goal of the community of concern is to change the culture on underage drinking by simply delaying the age of first use. So sometimes Beth has said that you can sum up this whole booklet in 3 little words: delay, delay, delay. And I guess that is such an important thing for parents to know. And the booklet gives parents lots of tips about what they can do to talk to their children about alcohol and other drug use. It gives information about the biology of addiction. We had 6 nationally prominent neuroscientists help to put together the section that we call Brain 101 to help educate parents about the effects of these chemicals on their children's brains. And I think that one of the most important things that we found as we were beginning to write the book, we went to Beth Kane Davidson as the director of our local addiction treatment program for help. And we said, well, we don't know what to put in a book like this. You know, what do our kids want to know? And she said, well, why don't you do a survey? Just do a really simple survey and ask the kids, you know, what do you want your parents to do if they think you're using alcohol? What do you want the school to do? What do you want your friends to do? And these surveys came back in what we look back at now, covered in a 4-letter word. And the 4-letter word from these freshmen through seniors in high school was HELP. What do you want your parents to do? Help me. What do you want the school to do? Help me. And the friends also. And I think that inspired us to realize that our kids, even though they seem to look like adults as they're getting older, through the older years of high school, they're still looking for help from their parents. And so that's why this whole idea of being guardrails is so important.
Since the booklet was published, have you been able to follow this in any way to find out how effective this has been in helping parents to help kids?
Well, it's been phenomenal. We were speaking in Houston recently, and a dad came up out of the audience and said, how do we reach people who don't come to these evening meetings talking about substance abuse prevention? And he gave us a grant for $100,000 to develop an e-learning course based on our booklet. And so we worked with Baylor University for a year and launched this e-learning course, which sits on our website. The e-learning course is based on 6 chapters in the booklet, and it's comprised of 6 10-minute sections. Each little section is self-contained, and it's colorful. There's 20 screens, and there's questions sprinkled throughout the course, and anybody can take it. It's not covered by a password, and it has been a tremendous help for schools. Schools are using this e-learning course as a tool to get parents into the information that's in the booklet and also to help them as they guide their children through middle school and high school. We also have seen a tremendous increase in parent networking through meetings. Schools are sponsoring leadership symposiums where they're bringing teams of leaders from each school to talk about what can we do together better than we can do alone to help the kids. And of course, the kids are included in these dialogues, which is a very important thing. often we see kids walking away from one of these leadership symposiums saying something like, gee, I didn't know our parents cared so much, or I didn't know that, you know, the school and the parents could do so much, that they would have so much time to help us and to spend talking about our problems. So it's very touching that, again, kids are asking for help and looking for support.
What resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to pursue further some of the issues we've raised in today's conversation?
Well, I would definitely suggest going on the Community of Concern website, which is www.thecommunityofconcern.org, and to look at getting the booklet. I mean, one thing, the e-learning course is there, and it takes you through the modules, and it's a way to bring parents together that don't actually come out at night to, you know, programs. But the booklet, how schools and other community organizations are using the booklet is, you know, they're joining together. They're all getting the booklet. The booklet's right there on your kitchen table or in your telephone drawer, and you can pull it out and look at, you know, gee, how do I handle the social scene with my teen? What do I need to look for in terms of warning signs? It's a very easy read, and it's something that can be picked up as a resource all the time.
And the booklet, I think, what we have found is it served as a bridge, not only in an individual school among the parents, the students, and the school administrators and counselors, but also among schools in a given community who are sharing the booklet, and then also among various communities who are also sharing the whole idea of putting parents on the same page.
How do you get the parent's guide?
There is a section on the website that is called Get the Book, and all of the information for getting the book is on that website.
Our gift for our first caller is a copy of the Community of Concern's book, A Parent's Guide for the Prevention of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Other Drug Use. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573. 8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a help to us. Mention show number 292, and please tell us what station you're listening to if you can. Since we air all over the world, it's fun to know where you are tuning in. Our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, is available in all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. At the site, you can even hear a show at any time via podcasting. You just click on underneath the topic and guest's name where it says Listen to Podcast. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Montgomery County Under 21 Activity Fund. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.